All right. Lee Morgan leads the band on this little nifty tune called Cornbread. And it's a title track of his 1965 album, featuring also Herbie Hancock on piano, Jackie McLean on alto sax, Hank Mobley on tenor sax, Larry Ridley on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trees Lead, and we're back with each other, thank goodness, for yet another day. That's a great, great privilege. As far as I'm concerned, it's great to be back with you again. Now, yesterday we talked about your role, which you did splendidly, I thought, as a historian and a documentarian. And you were talking about what you considered to be the most significant things accomplished by Donald Trump since taking office, and the most significant damage that you think he has done since taking office. That went quite well. Today, I want you to keep your hats on as historians and documentarians, although we will shift to a related subject. You're tasked today with offering your own analysis of what you consider to be the most significant changes in our society that it has undergone in the last 3 years, that is roughly coinciding with President Donald Trump's current term of office. Okay, that's a handful, so let me repeat it. You're offering your own analysis of what you consider to be the most significant changes our society has undergone in the last 3 years, roughly coinciding with President Donald Trump's current term in office. Okay. Got it? All right. So here's the number to call. 888-874-4888. You might have caught on to the method of our madness in asking these questions, because in the end, it matters what you are thinking. It matters how you line up for yourself. Never mind what people are saying and, you know, giving us the analysis that they say we need. We have the ability to come to our own conclusions about things. And this is what I want us to do today. What is this administration all about? What do you consider to be the most significant change or changes that we have undergone in the last 3 years? And what do you think would be the most, what would you say are the most significant milestones? They don't have to be bad, and they don't have to be good. They just have to be what you see as milestones, the most significant ones. What do you consider the most significant changes our society has undergone in the last 3 years, coinciding roughly with Donald Trump's current term in office? One way or the other, his term will end in November. Whether he gets another term or whether that's it for him, you know, we don't know how that will work out. But we have had 3 years to observe and to experience how our society has been functioning for the past 3 years. And we can make a judgment about that. What would you say were the most significant changes we as a society have gone through? And you can draw from your own experience. What was the most significant change in your life as it relates to policy of this administration? And what do you think will happen? We don't know what will happen, but we're free to conjecture. What will happen if Trump should have another term? What do you think would happen if this is it? That Biden supplants him, and then we have a changing of the guard. But in any event, I'm interested in how you have experienced this and still continue to experience this current administration in your own life. And by extension, how do you see it affecting other people's lives? In what ways would you say you can discern a dramatic change? What was that change, or is that change? Okay? That's where we're going today. Now, I'm asking you to do the job, the heavy lifting here, because in a way it's like a poll, except you have a little bit more room to stretch out and amplify your answer. You can now recall the things that you had hoped would happen, whether they have happened so far or not. You may see very vividly how your life has changed, or how you've had to change your life because of the approach of this administration in many, many areas. How that has affected you directly. Has it affected you in terms of a job, in terms of a career path, in terms of family life, in terms of the ability to make a living? And these are the nuts and bolts of all political campaigns. Never mind what they say. It's what they do. How do they translate all these lofty ideas? How did these lofty ideas get translated? Did it help you? Did it move you forward? Did it give you a way to progress in your life? Or are you think, the worse off for it? 888-874-4888. I haven't seen anybody yet, so we'll wait for the first caller. I know it's a little bit taxing, because you have to put more into an answer. It's not just one sentence or so. It's a pretty comprehensive thing. So we would want to get from you at a visceral level how you have been experiencing this administration for 3 years. What adjustments did you have to make in your life? What plans had to be scuttled, or what new path have you found to move on and beyond what we have to deal with now? What are you anticipating at the end of this year in November, when an election is held? Do you expect the same, more of the same, or even worse? That's it. That's as simple as that. We should think this way, not just who you're going to vote for, but what you're going to vote for. What are you expecting your life to be? And if there is, a contract between the person, a person, or all of us, and this mechanism called government, Are we in sync with each other? Have we been in sync with each other? Have we lost? Have we gained? What's our situation? We move first to Dexter from Maryland. You're on the air. Hello, Dexter. Dexter, you're on the air. Okay, we lost you. Sorry about that. You could call back again. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Yeah, good day, you three.
Oh, you sound terribly far away.
Pardon?
You sound very far away.
Yeah, you're sounding that way to me, too.
Oh, wow. Well, let's persevere. Yes.
Yeah, okay. I think it was some technical thing.
Yes.
I have seen this has exposed this administration's reign for the past 3 years have exposed the people and the government. It has exposed the people's gullibility. It has exposed the government's and also the people's willingness to go along with anything just to achieve their objectives. I think based upon all of what has occurred, like especially things like the Russiagate, the Ukraine thing, and people's denial of the truth of this, and also people refusing to see that everything was used as a tool to accomplish a coup. Like, for example, Russiagate was used, Ukraine was used, and I would say misused, because the truth didn't come out, because there was no such a thing as a Russiagate. And truly, the culprit of Ukraine should have been Biden and his son. The coronavirus was misused and is still being misused. And I think just like how, like with 9/11, people refused to look at the truth and the incongruences, they're doing the same thing with the coronavirus, attributed it to Trump. And I mean, for example, one of the things, and I'm not proselytizing for Trump because I'm neither for Trump nor Biden.
But you need to stay as close to the subject as possible.
I'm starting to veer off. Like for example, when Trump spoke about the use of that thing, chloroquine or
hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah, and they demonized him for it. And there was one particular writer in the New York Times who demonized him for it. And then they found out that it really worked. But they never made that correction. And the same person who demonized him from I think her name is Cohen or something, from the New York Times, she then wrote another story about how great it is.
I hate to interrupt you. You're not answering the question.
Okay. I was trying to use some things to try to answer the question. So anyway, what I'm trying to get at is to say that we are left in a mush, in a cloud, because of all the infighting, etc. And so we cannot really get the truth about what good, look at the first act. We barely responded to that. Look at what was done for the HBCUs. People barely gave any credence to that. But yet, when I got lost. I tell you what, I'll leave it there. And
leave it there.
Maybe Friday I will try to reassemble my thoughts.
But you can get back on track fast enough, because the question still leaves open, which you haven't gotten to, which is, what is your analysis of what you consider to be the most significant changes in our society? Not discussing individual things, but as a whole, what specific changes would you be able to say these were very significant, very significant, for whatever reason, but you find them to be significant. So you can still get back on track.
Thank you for being so generous, but I will wait till Friday and speak again on this.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Bye.
Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
My personal journey through Trumpdom for me has been, it's felt like one long nervous breakdown.
You call it?
I'm afraid to turn on the TV because I know that every day he can do something incredible. And so it's made me feel very nervous having him as the president. I feel like nobody's driving the car. So that's my personal feeling. But what I've noticed in our society, that there is so much more open racism, and there's also people in their families, including mine, have had such incredible, bitter, divisiveness. I mean, I remember when my brother was the only one, and his wife, he convinced his wife to vote for Trump in our family. And our family, as soon as it happened, almost broke into open warfare. I mean, it was just unbelievable, the vitriol that went on. We didn't speak to each other for months. My sister, Diane, was personally so upset. I don't know why she was so scared, but she's very afraid of him. She's very, very poor, and she's very afraid of what he's going to do. But in our own family, I noticed the same thing happened with my friend Barbara. Her sister and her, you know, had on Christmas, they had a fight about Trump, and the sister left and went home back to New York from New Jersey. So it's really, really personal. People feel really personal about this. I had a cousin who voted for him after she was supporting Bernie Sanders, and I had no idea of how you cross the Bernie Sanders street to go over to the Trump Avenue. I mean, how does that happen? And I just stopped talking to her, too. So I think that it's had a monumental effect on our society. From things that are just, you know, up in the air in the sky, things that you don't actually feel like they generate down to you, all the way down to your very, very personal family. The things that have really hurt my heart the most is watching what he has done to our public lands and how he's trashed the environment, because he's our first president. Remember this and underline this. This is your first pro-pollution president. He loves pollution. Maybe that's because that's what's in his veins, but he endorses it. He wants to bring as much back to the United States as possible, and he's willing to give up all of our land in the United States that's open to turn into development and oil fields, because he himself is stuck in the 1950s or the 1970s when, you know, maybe those things we used at that point to generate money in the United States, but we all know that's not going to work anymore. So he's taken us way, way back. So for me, it's been, just hurry up and get it over with. I don't think he's going to make it in this time, but I also have huge reservations, and I hate to say it, even in a sense of apathy, to vote for Joe Biden, because I'm not voting for Joe Biden. I'm voting against Trump, because, Joe Biden to me is such an awesome disappointment after being on the Bernie train. And the only thing I can think is he's willing to steal a lot of Bernie's, at least his rhetoric. So maybe he'll actually steal some of the ideas too. But, you know, I'm the kind of person that likes to give credit where credit's due. You know, to me, it matters that the person who put forth the ideas originally gets to actually enact them. So watching Joe Biden enact or try to enact some of the philosophies that Bernie brought to the table is not going to be very exciting to me. I'm not going to probably, you know, I'm not getting out there to campaign for him. I don't personally really care about him one way or the other. I don't particularly, I don't like his racial policies. I always thought he was slick. He's married to my sister's best friend from high school. She's a very, very nice lady, but other than that, I met him once, frankly, and I thought he was, I frankly felt like he was a used car dealer. That was my impression of him. So, you know, I don't know if he can bring the country together. And that's basically how Mr. Trump has affected me and my life and how I think he's affecting the United States.
This is exactly what I was looking for, because we think of politics, this kind of politics, as, you know, big, that it's overarching, and it isn't. It really is a very individualistic thing, because we react to it in different ways. Like you've just told us about what it did to your family. The whole notion that Trump should be elected or could be elected, and what that caused in your family. And there's a reason for that, because people have read this president at a different level, at different levels, but not necessarily all of them good. You mentioned that your sister is afraid of him, or something to that effect.
Yes,
she's not trusting. Yeah, I mean, this is very, very important. It is rare that we have the potential head of a country or the actual head of a country discussed this way in our experience. It is very rare. Now, we've discussed politics in the sense of, you know, political philosophy, but we've never discussed politics in the sense that it involves a person's character, and we make character judgments. We don't trust this man. He seems unstable. He seems not to be in tune with people, but in tune with his own agenda. And that has a very unsettling impact on people. So that is a very significant development, and you're absolutely right to point it out.
Okay. I just want to say one last thing before I exit. Just one small. I also forgot to tell you that my mother despises him and watches him from the morning to 7 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night when she goes to bed. And I believe what's keeping my mother alive is her deep-seated, unbelievable hatred for Trump. She despises him. And because she's 94, this fight against Trump, believe it or not, has made her so feisty. I mean, she can't stop. And she's very confrontational. When, you know, everyone she meets when she goes out, she rails against Trump. And I keep telling her, I don't want you to get us killed here, because, you know, you live in a Republican town. So, you know, but it's very, very scary. I mean, where my parents live is deeply, it's next to Wildwood, New Jersey, which is where Trump had that big convention in February. And I went down to protest against it. But I felt the walls really closing in on me down there. It was scary. I've had people say terrible things to me that are, you know, everyday people. A lady called me to discuss a carpet and heard the sirens at my apartment and said, oh, yeah, they want to get rid of even the fire department. And I said, no, that's not true. But I said, you know, my husband's brother was shot in the back of the head and killed by a cop. And I said, so there's real feelings about this. These are real things that really happen. You know, people think they can say whatever they want to you if you're white, and they think you're just going to go along with it. And I of course didn't go along with it, but maybe it was an education for her that day. But, you know, it's just a really scary time to live here. And as an activist, the last thing I want to say, it is terrifying to be an activist, because you don't know what can happen to you with President Trump at the helm. You don't know if you're going to get shot. You don't know if he's just going to unleash this lethal force, which he has left on a lot of people. I'm very scared of being an activist and having him at the helm. I never felt comfortable, period. But I remember when he got elected, I said to my brother, I said, you know, I have an X on my back. And I said, you just put a man in office that would shoot at that X. I said, I hope you feel good about what you did. So, I mean, it's very deep. It's very, very deep in families.
Thank you so much for contributing.
Thank you.
That was a powerful, powerful insight that you allowed us to have today. 888-874-4888. When it comes to translating this amorphous thing that we talk about and we call it politics, this is how it translates at the visceral level on the ground. This is what it does to people. And after all, a nation is a collection, a large collection in this case, of people. So you're dealing with people who in turn are dealing with how policies reverberate and affect them, how they are reacting to an organized system of government, how they feel about it. Is it something, do they feel that this is a friendly government? Do they feel that this is a government that primarily is concerned about being of service and to help promote the good of the nation? Or is this a government that has its own agenda? You get the sense that there are people who have a plan, but it's their plan, it's not our plan. And their plan involves making a lot of money, and the money has to come from somewhere, so they'll take it from the people and put it to themselves. We do not generally discuss what we feel about this apparatus of government. We generally don't discuss it. We talk about who is going to win or who you're voting for. We talk about politics in that sense. But we seldom ever engage in the actual decision or conversation as Gwen has allowed us to do today, which is to get very close to how on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour, minute-by-minute basis, this thing, this apparatus that we call government, literally impacts our lives. And we also understand that the awesomeness of government, this is what she has pointed out, this particular administration has made it oppressive. Government has become very oppressive. We feel it up against us and doing things that we don't want done to us. But they're doing it every single day. And we feel the pressure of it. We feel the insistence that we should just tolerate whatever is shoveled at us, and then everything will be all right. This is a dramatic change. This is one of the greatest changes, I think, in the relationship between the apparatus of government and the people. It's a remarkable thing to see and to witness in the United States, but it is perhaps one of the most significant changes that has occurred and probably might continue to occur. It is not at all something that you can brush aside. This is a fundamental change that takes us from what we consider to be a democratic with a small d, and we kind of fool around with notions of what that is. But there is no question this does not feel like a democratic process or a democratic government. It does not. It feels oppressive, and we actually feel it. And that is a remarkable shift in such a short time, almost overnight, that we have had to adjust to this new attitude of government. It's not government by the people for the people. It is government sometimes despite the people, government to spite the people. But it is not a cooperative presence, a benevolent presence in our lives anymore. Going into the future, should Trump get reelected, it will get worse. And it may be open, you know, or like no need to camouflage anything, no need to hide anything. We want to take everything for ourselves first. We see to ourselves first. And the resources of the government are our personal property, as we see here. That has been going on under Trump. So arrogating unto the power elite what they believe they deserve, this is very new. It might have happened before, but not in this way. We do have a history of having people in government who were thieves and scoundrels and crooks, yes. But I think we could also agree, not in this way, not so openly and so unapologetically and so clear, that we need to understand our place with this government, because it also has the power to punish. That's what I'm getting at. This is not the same idea of government at all. 888-874-4888. What do you consider to be the most significant change or changes in our society that it has undergone in the last 3 years, roughly coinciding with President Donald Trump's current term of office? Now, we don't normally think about it. We just go day to day. But it is important to take some time and study this question. What do we have as a government? Do we have a democratic process anymore? Has it become less and less democratic, more and more autocratic? Do you not see the importance of such a change? Or do you think it's just not happening? You know, I'm making it up. I'm exaggerating. And I'm unnecessarily instilling fear in people, in asking us to pause for a moment and think. And you don't have to go that far back, just since the last 3 years or so. What has been for you a noticeable change about the apparatus of government and how it functions, and whether it conflicts with your previous notions of what a government is supposed to be and do? Are you having any concerns about that? And the general direction of where this is going? That's a question. Why don't we take a little break here? And you can collect your thoughts in the meantime. We'll take the short break and come right back at 888-874-4888. All right. This is why I like jazz from the 1960s. You get this kind of wonderful treat. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we continue with our question today. What, based on your own analysis, what do you consider the most significant changes in our society that it has undergone in the last 3 years? And this is roughly coinciding with the Trump administration and his current term in office. Okay, so who's on the air? I don't see any numbers, any names. Oh, Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How you doing?
Okay, Ed. So, what do you consider the most significant change?
Well, Well, to be totally honest with you, you touched on it prior to the break. I've always considered myself an amateur historian, a student of history. And even though there have been times that corruption has been prevalent in this government from the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, I believe that this government is out in the open with it. And it surprises me how fragile this government is, even though I've never really put too much stake in the American experiment. But it just this points out how one individual, a political novice, without any type of political background whatsoever, could, number one, ascend to the highest elected office in the land, and number two, have such an impact and influence on policy and behavior of a system that is supposed to have, theoretically speaking, checks and balances, and how he can totally corrupt it and become a center point of what I believe is the end of the American democracy as we know it. And I don't think I'm exaggerating. I believe that he has shown how weak and how facile this government is. And he has shown that this government really doesn't represent the people. It isn't an effective organization of control or allocation of funds. And if one individual with little or no political knowledge whatsoever could rise to the highest office, the office of the land, and have an effect such as he has, and no one in this government has even tried to contain him, has tried to usurp him, and when it's clearly obvious to me that the man is mentally deranged, it gives me pause for the future, and has me, well, personally, really looking at a viable option of getting out of this country and going someplace else for myself and my family, because it's not only what Trump is, it's what was allowed to happen under his regime, and what that does for the future, as far as leadership, as far as electoral office, as far as what is going to be tolerated, because he's pushed the bar so low that I don't know what's next.
When you say that, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on what you've just said, what do you expect the larger reaction would be by the people, if you would use that phrase? What do you suspect could happen among the people who may very well feel just the way you just explained it?
Well, I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, there's a younger population. There's a large split between the ages in this country. There's a small youth population. There's a large middle-aged, older population. And when you're older, I mean, to be totally honest, you like the status quo. You don't want violent change because you've found a niche and you're comfortable in it, if you have, and you don't want violent change. And the youth want change. The youth want better. So there's that split. As far as what we call in quote-unquote a democratic system, it doesn't really exist, in my opinion. I mean, like, this one man should have been stopped a long time ago. I mean, he's got obvious criminal acts. I'm not a lawyer, but there's obvious criminal acts associated with him and many of his compatriots. He's handing out pardons to people now. He's responsible, for my own personal interpretation, he's responsible for several hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of deaths due to this COVID-19 pandemic and the lack of preparedness and the blatant disregard for any type of prudent advice or an ability to lead. It's, you know, I mean, if we've allowed this, what comes next? I mean, what can happen after this? Hitler didn't start in a vacuum. You know, people allowed things to happen, and situations were allowed to manifest. And then in the end, everybody said, you know, I was just following orders. You know, and some people say I'm exaggerating, but it can happen.
I don't think you're exaggerating at all. I think you're right on the point. We for some reason, we don't want to discuss it. We're reluctant to discuss what we are seeing and feeling. And we got a dose of that from Gwen, who started us off this afternoon, talking about what has happened to her family. The internal problems directly related to Trump and his administration and what it has caused, the reverberations, the breaking up, if you will, even of family and internal quarrels and problems. So this is this is not a theoretical exercise. This is what is happening really to people. So thanks so much, Ed, for getting us started after the break today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hello.
I'm going to stay on track. What this brings to my mind is people need to get to the point where they understand that the truth is coming out, that those who rule, the ruling class that really runs everything here, they have reached a point that they want to be at where they do all they can to enrich themselves and impoverish the majority of the people, which is their goal to in life in terms of profit by impoverishing the people here and throughout the world. So that's what the big lesson is to me. And they're able to bamboozle people by making you think that you're in the home of true democracy when you're not, and, you know, getting away with it. So, people who are thinking should be getting to the point of realizing who is really in charge and what the goal is for them here in the country, as we see as the real income goes down and down and down and more people are impoverished and the country is going around the world taking the resources, human and material, wherever it can do it. So that's the major thing that comes to my mind with the Trump administration. Even though he's not as smooth as Obama or someone like that, he is able to accomplish the goal of those who rule. So if he goes or stays, things are on the same track. The people lose and the ruling class wins.
Why are people, in your view, why are people so reluctant to come to terms with this reality?
That, to me, is easy to understand because the ruling class is, they're masters at confusing people. So the divide and conquer technique is the best, and all of its different ways of doing that. And people are confused and they get the information from the mass media and all its divisions, the schools, and people are confused and they don't have any way to get information. So it's just easy to direct the attention from the perpetrator of this carnage onto somebody else. You know, you got a list, a long list of scapegoats that you can bring out, you know, whether it's women, age, young against old, so-called races, Mexicans. You know, you have a long list of ways you can divide people up. So people are not to the point where they can understand who their real enemy is, you know. The enemy is not one of the scapegoats. The enemy is those who rule. And, you know, those who rule, you don't have any real political parties that represent the people. Democrat, Republican, those are both ruling class controlled bodies. So, and this two-party system, so-called, doesn't represent the interests of the masses of people. So people haven't gotten to understand that yet, you know, and those who rule are very skillful in bamboozling people to the point where they don't seem to get it about these so-called parties do not represent their interest.
Thank you. Thank you for your contribution today. Alicia from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Thank you for the question.
Hello.
I was thinking about Gwen's comment and thinking about, I guess, the impact in my own life and my own family. And for me, what it's shown is, like, Trump's presidency has shown me how complicit the Democratic Party is in the man he has, you know, he's been allowed to be. And for me, like, I've chosen not to vote. And I have a relative in my family who is adamant about voting. And, you know, she believes that we need to vote for the Democratic Party. We need to make sure we get Trump out of office, where I don't believe that. And even when Trump was elected, like, I told her I did not vote. And it was like, well, it's your fault that Trump is in office. And people who don't vote, it's their fault that Trump is in office. But I remember, you know, Leona talked about the American Film Festival and one of the films, Freedom on My Mind. And I've seen that before, but I watched it again. And I saw how these people struggled and died for the right to vote. And Ed from Queens talked about exercising the franchise. So I said to myself, people died for my right to exercise the franchise. So I'm not going to throw it away just to vote for Joe Biden in order to get Trump out of office, because it's basically, you know, like people say, the lesser of two evils. But, you know, I've heard, you know, the lesser of two evils is still evil. So that's my comment.
Thank you. But let me ask, so what are you doing this year? You're still not going to vote?
Absolutely not. Because, again, I mean, I saw that movie again, you know, when it was offered during with the American Film Festival. And it just, oh, my God, it just really resonated with me in a way that it didn't when I first saw it. And I just feel like I would be doing myself a disservice, and I'd be doing the people who struggled and fought for me to have that right, I'd be doing them a disservice. I you know, people didn't struggle for us to have the right to vote a Biden into office. That wasn't the purpose. It was about empowerment. It was about about empowerment, about the betterment of society. And I'm not throwing my vote away, because that's not what Joe Biden is bringing to the table. You know, he's bought and sold. And I, you know, I just can't be complicit in that.
All right. I hear you. Thanks for contributing today. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved. How are you?
Hello. Okay, Willie.
You know, Utrice, when you teach, you really do teach. And because, you know, you've raised the question before. And listening. And we have to listen. to learn. You know, I listened twice to your program and Gary. But anyway, you, to the question you asked, what the significant change that you have I have noticed? Well, I think Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder, it's clear to them because it's right in front of our eyes. But the change that we see, first of all, I wouldn't say that's a government. It's a crime syndicate. I believe in using the proper term. It is a crime syndicate. And what the change that I've seen, this entire nation, and there are few that follows the example of the United States because it influences the world, has gone totally insane. Following the example of a totally, I remember when Trump, you were the first one that pointed out that he was not mentally stable. But there was a brother, his name was Bruce, and he said, he's a madman. So to see a madman hijack the government, not just a madman, a criminal madman hijack the government, and rot, you did a program and a program on them looting the treasury. Right now, there probably is no money for Social Security, anything that benefits the people. These guys, you did a thing on the treasury, remember? A program on it.
Yes.
These guys I'm so frightened, you trees, about it, because when we do get ourselves our act together. I'm so frustrated. There probably is no money left in the treasury, and that's our money. And what surprises me, there are many, many brilliant minds in this country, and I can't believe what I'm seeing. The entire nation has gone totally insane. That's the greatest change I've seen. The entire nation and government has gone insane.
Do you see any real impact that the people would have in this situation to do anything about it?
Well, I'm not qualified to point that out, but their minds. Right in this institution, PRN, they're brilliant people, and we could follow their leadership. But for some reason, I don't know what. No, people are speaking, but not enough. That's all. That's what.
What about in Congress? What about in the so-called opposition party, the Democrats?
You're toying with us again. Because you've done enough programs on that for us to know to think that the Republicans is any different than the Democratic Party. It's one party. We know it's this is very, very clear to the people who are thinking and listening and paying attention. It's very, very clear. So it's an insult. Not, I know you wouldn't insult us, but we know better, you trees. We're not that ignorant.
You don't see any possibility of the Democrats coming to some kind of a epiphany, saying, "Look, it's bad, but it's never been this bad in Congress. We ought to do something and put up a fight."
That's correct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that is correct. But what I think, Yutris, is that we're seeing what the United States really is. I remember when you did the program and what it means to be an American, and I said it was criminal. Simple. But before, it was hidden, covert. But it's wide open now. Everybody could see it. And I think there's a reason for it. The whole world, what we've been seeing in the particular people of color in this country is what we've been seeing from day one. The whole world is now seeing it for themselves. And there must be a reason for it. Because everything has to come to closure. And I think it's a closure of the American empire. That's all.
Well, thank you. You had the last word because we're out of time. Thank you, Willie.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for contributing today. Thank you. Okay. Love you, too. I thank you all. And we have to have more of these discussions, if only to encourage a broader involvement, that people should begin to have these discussions themselves, among themselves, in their communities, in their homes. What is this place that we now occupy? What are we to expect? Well, we know the answer is you could expect any and everything, but which means we are unguarded. We have no protection. And if we are to have protection, what will it be and how do we get it? We'll continue talking, but thank you so much for talking today. We'll turn to each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.